The Border Patrol continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Buchady with you. Stephen St. John's going to join us coming up in a little bit. College basketball is in full swing. I think at last check, 88% of college basketball teams are operational right now and playing games. So that's a positive. We're going to talk about that with Mike DeCourcy. When I was a kid, my Aunt Kate and my Uncle Wolf, we called him Wolf.
That's awesome.
They had, that was his wrestling nickname from Ark City. They had a dog named Asia because
after the band?
She was after the Steely Dan album because she was a black lab that had a white stripe right down the middle, and the cover of the album Asia by Steely Dan was a black album with like a red and white stripe right down the middle. So they thought the dog looked like the album cover, so they named her Asia. Mike DeCourcy joins us, and Steely Dan is Mike's music. Good morning, Mike. How are you, man?
I'm great, Nate. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, and I said this, positive news so far. I think 88% of the teams in college basketball are playing. We're going to focus on the positive right now, and we're getting more teams up and running, so we'll get to that in a second. But I always have to check in because you are our resident Pittsburgh Steeler expert and fan, and your team has been through the ringer a couple of times this year with opponents of theirs having coronavirus issues that caused their schedule to be turned upside down. Now you guys are supposed to play the Ravens at 2:40 Central Time tomorrow because we got to make sure that we have time for the Rockefeller Christmas tree lighting ceremony on NBC that night. When has the NFL ever been bumped for anything, by the way? That tells you what a big deal the Rockefeller Christmas tree lighting ceremony is. They bumped the NFL. That's unbelievable. What do you think of the way the NFL is handling this situation with the Ravens and how it affects the Steelers right now?
Well, I don't think it's been their finest moment, I will say that. They are dealing with a lot of difficult issues, but I do think that they're somewhat being played, is it maybe? Manipulated seems a bit strong, but played a bit by the Baltimore organization. What happened yesterday, the move to Tuesday, I think there was logic in it. They had to make sure that they were done with cases, new cases. So I thought the move to Tuesday made sense, but the move to Wednesday and the coincidence that J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram are both eligible then, if they do that, is a bit strong for me.
That does stand out a little bit, especially when the Broncos had to play a game with a practice squad wide receiver at quarterback because they would not budge on that game at all, and they said, no, you got to go ahead and play.
Yeah, that's exactly the, you know, in some ways it seems as though the rules of the game should be in place once the date is established, and you shouldn't be able to all of a sudden miraculously have players return because, oh, we moved the date five times. I don't think that sounds right. If it were a suspension, you wouldn't all of a sudden get that player back. So I know it's not the same as a suspension, but it's a very hard thing to swallow when that date has been moved multiple times, and the most recent move was did not typically follow the NFL's procedures based on what we've seen. It seemed extraordinary to what we've seen in the past. If you look at the fact that the NFL basically said that they were clear to go on Monday night, and then the Baltimore players started saying, well, we're not comfortable with that. You know, we haven't practiced. Well, you know, the young man from Denver didn't practice either. I mean, he was in practice. He didn't practice that. He didn't practice doing this stuff. What if he said, oh, I might hurt my arm. We can't play. What do you do? I don't think that that's necessarily, I think the NFL's handled this really well. Honestly, Nate, I think the way this has all been viewed or covered or analyzed, not just in the NFL, but in all of sports, we have been much more as a media, and when I say as a media, I'm including now those who post on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, because they are part of the media to an extent, and there's this feeling that every canceled game or postponed game or altered game is a disaster. When I think that at some point you have to say that every game that happens in this circumstance, without a major incident, without the virus being spread, is sort of a tiny little miracle. You know, the way when I was in the newspaper business, I used to call the paper, you know, like a little daily miracle. You'd start with, you know, with nothing, and by the end of the, you know, by the next morning, you'd have this, you know, 75-80 page publication on somebody's doorstep. I mean, it was pretty amazing that we did that every day. Mm-hmm. And I think getting these games off is pretty impressive. And it's not being treated that way. Yeah, I have colleagues in the media that say horrible, I mean, like, profane things about how this is operating every day. You know, I see, you know, there was a headline on Yahoo that the Baltimore Steelers game was an embarrassment to the NFL, and I don't think it referenced this latest postponement. I think just the fact that it was being postponed to Tuesday was what they were talking about, and I just don't think there's been enough credit given to those, you know, in the colleges, in the various leagues, that have worked to make these things happen against some significant obstacles that they've never encountered before. I don't think they've gotten enough credit across the board.
And significant obstacles that they did not create.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't create the virus. They didn't create the national response to the virus. The fact that it's like raging out of control in this country. That, you know, the sports, maybe you could argue they've contributed some to it by having gatherings and stadiums and all that. I don't know. I can't get into that because I don't know enough of the knock-on effect of it all, but they didn't create the situation. They're trying to deal with it just like a lot of other industries are. And I have to say, what I was thinking about when you were saying all that, Mike, is as a guy who does play-by-play for a professional sports team here in town, and I love that job with all my heart. I get genuinely excited. I get butterflies before the games. I get so excited to call the games. There was a 2-3 month stretch this year where we had no games to call, and we didn't know if we were getting any games. And I remember the first game that Sporting Kansas City played back at the start of this thing, where it was going to be down in Orlando in the bubble, and they'd already sent two teams home. And I remember 20 minutes before the game, we were sitting around going, what do you think? Does this game happen or not? You know, and so to this point, like, if you – I don't see how you can take the opportunity to watch a game for granted. We had it taken away from us for months, and it's really difficult to pull these things off, and that's why I started off your segment by saying what I said. 88% of the teams in college basketball are playing right now. We could focus on the 12 that aren't, because that's a big deal, and it is a big deal, but we could also say, man, how lucky are we that there have been all these games that we've already gotten to watch so far this year in college basketball?
It's not just us watching, okay? And you're right. I mean, and as someone who you know, I mean, sports have basically, you know, been my life for 50 years, more than 50 years. And so I appreciate that deeply. But, you know, in order for it not to just be a selfish enterprise in the sense that, hey, we get to watch games, you have to look at what was the reaction when people tried to take away high school sports.
Yeah.
Kids wanted to play.
Yeah.
What was the reaction when the Big Ten said, you know, we don't think it's prudent to play football this fall? The players wanted to play. I spoke with Sean Wade, who's a cornerback for Ohio State, and Wyatt Davis, who's one of their star guards. They're both probably going to be first-round picks in the spring. And they talked after the season was restored for the Big Ten, we talked about why they, quote, opted back in. And they wanted to play. This is important to them. It's those who make a living as players for Sporting KC or for the Pittsburgh Steelers or whoever want to get paid. They want to play. And now that they're in the playoffs, know, I'm sure Sporting KC really wants to hold up MLS Cup again. Mm-hmm. I think those things are all important. And the fact that we've been able to have them done, I really give a lot of credit to the athletes who participate, to the coaches who are doing their job, to the staff members, and to the leagues for creating environments in which it can be done reasonably safely. And to the extent that those protocols that have been devised are ignored or dismissed or seen as an inconvenience because I got to coach my team the way I've always coached my team, hey, you know what? You can't. Things are different now. So follow the protocols and let us get to, you know, let's continue to have this wonderful thing that we all appreciate so much.
Yeah, and that's to kind of go back to the NFL thing. That's why I really don't have a ton of sympathy for the Broncos in their case because they didn't follow the protocols and the league smacked them down for it. The problem I have is more with the way they've treated the Ravens, which is like, well, we're going to do whatever we can to help you guys out because your game means more. And to me, it doesn't. And look, I don't know. Maybe there's not as enough. There's no evidence that the Ravens have done anything wrong or violated protocols. But
actually, there is.
Their trainer, right?
One of their strength and conditioning coaches, and I don't know if it's the head or whatever. He has been named. I don't remember the name. Mm-hmm. But that person is the Ravens have asserted that person violated the protocols. And to me, that's an organizational thing because of all the people that deal with athletes, there is not a single person in a sporting organization that deals more directly with the athletes than the strength and conditioning coach. The head coach might go weeks in an NFL situation without really interacting that much with the backup tight end. But the strength coach, he or she is going to be right there with the athlete, making sure they get that extra squat in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, your organizational job is to communicate. These are the protocols. You are going to follow them. I don't care what your view on the virus is. If you don't do these things, you will be dealt with. And apparently that didn't happen to the extent necessary in Baltimore to impress upon that particular person that it needed to happen.
Yeah.
And so when we get to the end of this, and until they play the game and all that, they're not going to come out with a final decision. But we saw what happened to Mike Tomlin for wearing the wrong mask. He got like $100,000, and we saw what happened to the Saints over the weekend. They got I think a half mil and a seventh round draft pick. Well, if that's the case, then what the Ravens have done in inconveniencing the NFL to this extent and taking a primetime Thanksgiving game that was going to get their highest rating of the season and turning it into an afternoon soap opera, that to me is, we're talking like borderline first round pick to me. That seems, based on prior circumstances and what the punishment, you would think that the first round pick would be on the table. I don't think they'll do it, but that you'd have to negotiate down from there.
Yeah, they need to hammer the Ravens for that. There's no doubt about it because it's, and what it does to the Steelers, are they still supposed to play Sunday night against the Bills?
They're supposed to play the Washington football team on Sunday, but they are moving that game to Monday.
Okay, so they're going to play a Wednesday to Monday, and then every week's going to be a short week for the Steelers for gosh knows how long. So there's a knock-on effect to all that, no doubt about it. All right, Mike, let's get into some of this college basketball stuff. K-State got their first win last night. It was over UMKC, so you know, I don't know what you take from it. It was a close game, but K-State, they need some young players to step up. I was impressed with Nigel Pack. He had 14 points, 3 of 6 from beyond the arc in that game. What do you make of K-State so far getting their first win after dropping the first two games of the season?
Well, it's certainly better than the ultimate result in the first two games. But I think what the weekend showed is that they have a lot of work to do, and this is certainly going to be a season in which the results on the floor matter less than the progress in the huddle, the progress in practice, the progress in the locker room, to the extent that we have locker rooms now. It's a figurative locker room. You know, they have to. This is a true rebuild at K-State. It's not going to happen immediately. They are trying to establish who they want to be over the next several years, not the next several months. And certainly winning a game like that last night is better than losing it. But the fact that it was as close as it was suggests that they still have a long way to go, and that when they eventually get to Big 12 games, and that in this particular season, there's a lot less buffer between your non-conference games and your conference games. You didn't have exhibitions. You didn't have a public scrimmage, all those sorts of things that help you to sort of get guys introduced to what it's like to be in high major college basketball. So it's a real challenge for Bruce and his staff, and I think it's going to be a short year that's a long year.
Yeah, let's move on to the Jayhawks now. They play Kentucky tonight. That's a big game. It's right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And before we get into tonight's game, Mike, I'd like to get your thoughts just on what we've seen from Kansas so far. They lost to Gonzaga 102-90. They kind of hung around with Gonzaga for most of the game, and then they just went on a big run at the end of the game and blew away Kansas, really. And they bounced back with a 94-72 win over St. Joe's, in which Kristen Brown had 30 points in that game. I thought Gonzaga was awesome when I watched him. I didn't really come away thinking that much bad about Kansas. I just thought, man, that's a good Gonzaga team. But what do we know about KU after these first two games?
Well, I think the first thing you said, I mean, they start at the very top. why Bill wanted to do that, I'm not sure. Because ordinarily he would have played this Kentucky team in the Champions Classic, and that would have been on November 10th, and that would have been a good test for them, because Kentucky would have come in with a lot of great length and a lot of great promise, but they wouldn't be nearly what they're going to be in March. So that's kind of a good game for the Jayhawks, because it looks better on your selection resume one way or the other, no matter what the result is. It's going to look better on your selection resume than the level of challenge you face in the game you play. I tell you right now, I watched Kentucky on Sunday afternoon against Richmond, and Richmond's very good, and Richmond was the exact right team to beat Kentucky on that day. Kentucky has a lot of ability. They're long, they're quick, they're agile, and so, but they also don't shoot the ball great. And they're still learning to play defense with all that length and athleticism. And so it's a perfect opportunity for Kansas tonight to play a team that by March is going to be terrific. I think outstanding. I really think Kentucky has a chance to be great. But in this game, is still learning and still trying to figure it out. I thought that the fact that Kansas hung with Gonzaga for as long as they did was a really promising note for the Jayhawks. They don't have the firepower that Gonzaga has, and they're not going to have it either. And, again, somewhat like Kentucky, but maybe to a slightly lesser degree because they have a significant amount of experience. But there's no defense in college basketball that's as good on November 15th or November 20th or whatever as it is in March. I mean, you learn those habits and those rotations and who's going to be where, and you start to understand, okay, I've just started to play with this guy, but I know what he does, you know, what he does in this situation, so I need to cover for it. Or I know he's got my back in this situation, so I can gamble for this steal. And all those sorts of things that you learn through repetition and through experience that you don't have now. You have some repetition in practice and a little bit of experience from three games. So for them to be in the situation that they are, I think that the Gonzaga game was really promising. Even though they ended up giving up 100 points, and even though they ended up losing the game, I thought the fact that they were able to trade buckets with Gonzaga for as long as they did, really promising. They have to relearn how to score to an extent. You don't have a mountain inside who, if you can get them isolated, and you can get him in, you get the ball in there, you know, who's going to stop him from dunking it? You don't have that guy anymore. You don't have that little engine at point guard who can zip the ball up the floor faster than almost anybody in college basketball can go without the ball. Those are two really significant aspects of the Jayhawks attack that are gone, and they knew were gone, but it still takes a little while to get used to playing without two players like Doak and Dotson.
Yeah, and look, they followed it up with 94 points against St. Joe's, And, I mean, gosh, Christian Brown was great. I thought Bryce Thompson's looked exciting and very full of confidence. And Abaji had 18 points in that game. But one guy that we heard a lot about coming into the season in terms of being expected to take a big step forward this year and going to be a key because he's the one true big guy inside is David McCormick. He played 20 minutes against Gonzaga, scored 8 points, and he played 11 minutes against St. Joe's and scored 8 points. What do we make of, do they need a lot more from him? I think you're expecting more than a 15-minute-per-game average from your starting center, right?
Did I not read that he's banged up a little bit?
You know what? It's very possible that I missed that, too.
I thought I saw that he had a little thing going on. I don't remember what it was. But you know, in what I watched against Gonzaga, he maybe only scored 8 points, but he was doing really well battling against multiple big guys. That's a big team in addition to being a good team. I liked what I saw. I liked the life that I saw in him underneath, the energy. I thought he established position really well, commanded his spot, made good scoring moves. If I'm not wrong about his health, then maybe there's something to be concerned about. But I thought that he looked really dynamic as a big man in those stretches of the Gonzaga game that he played. And that coincided with when they were playing their best as well.
Yes, and Mike, you're right, he was held to 11 minutes because of an injury versus the Hawks. Bill Self says, I think he's been fine. He has the best attitude. I think he just put too much pressure on himself, and I've pumped him up pretty good. But, yeah, he was dealing with a little bit of an injury, which is why he only played 11 minutes against St. Joe's.
Okay, so, yeah, I like him. I mean, he's got to be a close to 30-minute player. I mean, 28 minutes, whatever. He's got to be something close to that. But I think if he shows over time what I saw in that, especially in the early second half, late first half, early second half, I really liked what I saw there. He's a very energetic guy. When I first saw him, I came to practice a couple of years ago when I spoke to the Tiger Club and made my side trip over to practice. That was just one of his first practices, and I liked him from the first minute I saw him. I think he's got great energy, great bounce, good hands. I thought there was really something there, and so when I was watching him against the Zags, I'm like, "Yep, I got it again." I saw, first time I saw him, I loved him. He's going to be really good, so I have a lot of confidence that he's going to have a really good year for the Jayhawks.
It's a tweaked knee, so we'll see what he's able to do tonight. KU taking on Kentucky, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, Mike. Also, the Missouri Tigers, they are 1-0. They got a blowout win over Oral Roberts last week, and now they're going to play their second game against the Oregon Ducks on Wednesday. Oregon hasn't played yet this year. They are ranked number 21 in the country. What kind of a game is that one going to look like?
Well, I'll be interested. I think that's a great test for the Tigers because they have the advantage over Oregon in that they've had their group together for a decent amount of time. We talked about this, I think, last week or the week before about how this group of Tigers has pretty much been with obvious alterations on the fringe, but this core group has been together for a few years, and Oregon is very talented. And they have a few guys from last year, but they're putting a lot of pieces, adding a lot of pieces on. So maybe you have a little bit of an advantage there. And I think that has to be who Mizzou ultimately is anyway. They're going to play more talented teams in their league. Kentucky, as I mentioned before, has more talent. Florida probably has more talent. Tennessee has more talent. But if you as a group have a chemistry and a connection, and an understanding that supersedes that talent, you can win those games. We've seen it dozens of times, hundreds of times in college basketball. So that's who Mizzou has to be. They have to be tough defensively. They have to make shots, and they have to have that connection between that core group. And if they do, I think that they can have a successful year. And Oregon's a great chance to really make a statement. It's a very good team, but a team, again, that more than many is less established than it will be by the end of the year.
Yeah, that Oregon team was supposed to play Eastern Washington in their first game, but Eastern Washington had a couple of positive cases. That's why that game got postponed, so not anything on the Oregon side. So hopefully that game gets off without a hitch on Wednesday night. And you know what? The football game will be over by then, Mike, theoretically. So, you know, doubleheader for you there. Afternoon football, evening basketball involving the Missouri Tigers. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Nate.
That is Mike DeCourcy, the best in the business when it comes to breaking down college basketball. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.